Hello, I'm Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, and much more. Joining us today is Dr. Susan Ottiano, who is a geneticist and plant breeder that heads up the potato breeding program at the Kenya Agriculture and Livestock Research Organization, KALRO, in Tigoni, situated northwest of the country's capital, Nairobi. With over two decades of experience, Dr. Ottiano is a pioneer in clean potato seed production and an advocate for food security, sustainable agriculture, and smallholder empowerment. Today, she leads transformative research projects that enhance climate resilience, disease resistance, and nutrition in one of Africa's most important food crops, the potato. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Dr. Ottiano, your academic and professional journey spans Kenya, Germany, United States, where you earned a PhD in plant breeding, genetics, and biotechnology from Michigan State University. First of all, what inspired you to commit to plant breeding and horticulture, and especially the potato?
Thank you. Now, I know in Africa, and in specifically sub-Saharan Africa, we have issues to do with food security. And potato in Kenya specifically is the second most important crop after maize, where we have over 1.3 million farmers in Kenya depending on the crop for their livelihood. And as you know, a potato is a short season crop, which our farmers can be able to plant within 3 months, 4 months or 6 months. So if you take the early maturing varieties that take up to 3 months, this offer food security, meaning that within a year, you can have up to 4 harvests. So the issues of food security for the smallholder farmers really inspired my love for breeding of potato. And as you can see that I have horticulture background, horticulture still deals with the annuals. Most of the crops that are either vegetables that take shorter season to grow, that is bring foods to the plate and also money to the pocket of the smallholder farmer. So these were the main reason why I had the interest to be able to pursue breeding, especially for potato, which plays a big role in our economy. In Kenya, it is the second most important. And for that reason, many farmers rely on potato production for, food and also for resources for taking their children to school, hence that interest in pursuing breeding for potato.
I love how you have taken a subject matter that is so meaningful to the economy and sustainable practices for farmers in the local communities.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you an important question because we're very much advocates for education on the show. Is that you earned your qualifications from different institutions? Please tell us about your thinking behind studying at these various schools, and also about some of the life experiences you acquired from being in these vastly different countries.
So I would take at it in this front. Thinking of studying at different universities, I would say this was because of the opportunities that I got. So when I had done my undergraduate, there were my alma maters that the professors who were in the university, and because I was among the best students in the university, there were opportunities for a scholarship in Germany. So when I made my application, sometimes I always say that if you work hard, your credentials will, speak for you. So when I sent out my applications for those scholarship for the master's degree, my credentials spoke for me. I actually really wanted to go back to Germany for my PhD. It wasn't possible because during that time, it's a funny story. So during that time, I was heavily pregnant with my second born. So I think when I went for an interview, I wasn't very prepared. So there is need to be very prepared. So I wasn't picked for the position, but I did give up. I felt a little discouraged because I really wanted to go back to Germany for my PhD, but then I stayed, took care of my baby. So those are some of the challenges that women go through. As opposed to men, there will be no day that they will be pregnant, and you see that. So when I got an opportunity after making application for the PhD, so this one I decided to make application to the US, and because I had performed well in Germany, I was picked. So my credentials helped, propel me to the new levels, not just by default. Yeah.
And just as we go slightly off topic, I know I've interrupted your answer here, but when you had your second child, obviously you didn't get into Germany, which was your first choice. Then
Yeah.
did that instance almost set you back time-wise to look after your baby before you then went again to make applications for your PhD?
Yes, I took 2 years before making an application. I felt a little discouraged, but then I also encouraged myself that, oh, yeah, so this would give me enough time to take care of my baby. As I try to restrategize on which other opportunities that could be, sent out. So when I made application, my baby was 3 years, almost going to 4 years. So I was very comfortable. But also something to note, as I was thinking of making application, I got another pregnancy.
Wow.
Yes. So as I was going for my PhD, I left a 1.5 year old baby. Okay. So the one that I was pregnant as I was making application for my Germany one was already almost like 4 years. So yeah, I think those are some of the challenges that you want to juggle between your career and also like family. It's a tough.
How have you managed that? Because when you, as you were talking in my mind, I was immediately thinking, you know what, as a man, maybe I've got my 3-year trajectory. I'm going to do this qualification, and I'm going here and I'm
And
going
it
there.
is possible.
So how did
For a
you
man, it's
manage
possible.
as a woman, your lived experience, being able to still pursue your education, but maybe not going on a straight line?
Yes. So this was possible. My husband played a very big role because he's also an academician. So as I was leaving my children, I left with the, because when I went to the US, I couldn't go with my children. My scholarship only took care of me. So I would just come home every December, every once a year. Yes, that is the sacrifice that women go through, because then you have to either leave your career to stagnate and push your family, or push your family and your career stagnates. So there are also these hard choices that you have to make. So my husband remained behind with one of my cousins and a house girl. In Africa, it's cheaper to manage house girls and big families, right? So that made it possible
But
for
it
me to
also speaks to how forward-thinking your husband is in terms of not denying your growth opportunities.
Absolutely. He
Wow.
values education. We valued education. Those are some of the sacrifices that we have to make as a family, because when we talk together, we know it's all for the good of the family. When I progress, we all progress. So, And I'm so grateful to God for that. Yeah.
And
Yeah.
thinking about education and thinking about the importance here, as a female leader within the science space, what advice would you give to young African women aspiring to enter agricultural research or STEM fields in general?
So what I know is that STEM is a good a career path, because there are several opportunities. Not just most people think agriculture is going to the farm and dirtifying your hands, but there are different facets. When you do STEM, you can either be a biologist, you can be an entomologist, you can be a pathologist, you can be horticulture, which are the study of both flowers, fruits. No, flowers is floriculture, vegetables is olericulture, pomology is fruits. You can do molecular biology. We say in Africa is a hoe and the soil, right? But there are many things. So I would encourage the young ladies to take, especially biology, because agriculture more or less is biology, right? They take the sciences, the biology very seriously. It's a career path that is rewarding. Through agriculture, I was able to go outside and experience different culture and get to know what are the best ways that we can be able to come back home and produce our, food back at home in a more sustainable manner. So by looking at the sustainability is looking at the crop protection, you look at the production and productivity. What are the things that you can do to increase your productivity, right? What are the things that you can do to make sure that with the climate change that is happening, that you are getting varieties that are adopted to the changing climate that we are experiencing at the moment. It opens a quite large array of that allows one to see, science in a different perspective. And by collaboration with other people that have gone ahead, because we say that we are riding on our success is because of the giants who are ahead of us, right? So there are already people who've done many activities or many research that have worked in their countries, and when we come back home, we can replicate those good ideas and bring productivity and food security back at home in a big way.
You've exposed a range of different opportunities in terms of the disciplines that are available for people to work in a variety of different fields, and also the impact that they can make, not just to themselves, but to the country at large. One of the realities, though, is that sometimes a girl's education may be compromised because of poverty. Thinking about that aspect, what would your message be for girls to continue with their education and to break out of those poverty cycles and have that possibility of transforming themselves and their communities?
If we look at our maybe African culture generally, the woman is supposed to stay at home and take care of the children, supposedly. And I feel this is a noble role, because then if you are empowered and you are an educated woman, or even if you are not educated, but you are empowered that you are a farmer who is able to grow your crops and you are able to sell it, don't you think that you already have resources to take your children to school? Okay, to make their life different from yours. So for me, I believe that women empowerment is very crucial. We have a saying that if you help a woman, you help the entire community, because the woman has the children, has the sisters, has the brothers, and most of the time they will pass this information to the community. Because when a woman is empowered, they value education. Some of the the women get into, this poverty cycle because they do not have the resources. They have to be dependents. When you are a dependent, you have to listen, and someone has to dictate to you what they want to be done. But I can imagine if a woman is empowered, then they also dictate what they want to be done. And in most cases, it will be very good things. They will want their children to go to school. They will want them to have the better life. And if they have all that, I think the cycle of poverty is broken.
And that's some of the advantages of accessing education to become empowered and break through those barriers.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Staying on this topic, in your view, how far do you feel Kenya has come in terms of achieving gender equality? And let's talk about this in your disciplines, in science and agriculture. And looking to the future, where do we still need to get work done, particularly in leadership and policy making?
We are making strides, not very quickly as we would have wanted. I know in Kenya we have legislation that are already talking about gender equality, which we have one of our lawyers. She's one of the judges in the High Court, in the Supreme Court, who brought in the issues of gender equality that has been is in already in our constitution. So it's still a work in progress. We can't say that we've made great progress, but it's a work in progress because we have the affirmative action for women in leadership, especially in our parliament. In our research institution, we have several ladies who are in management position at CALRO. At least I know our deputy directors, majority of them, they are women. The progress is not as quickly as we would have thought, but we are making progress towards gender equality and women in engagement in leadership positions.
And they become role models, hopefully, for the women underneath, or let's say at lower ranks or in other spaces. That gives that visibility.
Absolutely true. Yeah, that is very true.
And whilst we're on this topic, can you tell us about any trailblazing Kenyan women, either past or present, who've inspired your journey and you think maybe deserve some recognition for the contributions that they've made to the science field, agriculture, or even gender equality?
So one of the trailblazing women is Professor Wangari Maathai. She's late. She was very passionate about environment, and it was at a time when our country is very patriarchal. At that time, women were not heard. Maybe you was to be seen, not to be heard. And she worked very hard to ensure that some of our special parks that were the government of those days wanted to convert into tall skyscrapers and build on them. I think she paid for it because at some times her hair was even shaved and she was badly beaten by the police officers because of that. So I think that was bravery on her side, which it's hard to find. And the way she was very passionate about the environment, she kept on talking about us preserving our environment, and I think through that we have managed to have some, is it we call the carbon credits, because of courtesy of her ensuring that most of the trees that were supposed to be cut were planted, those just to ensure that environment was taken care of. And also another one that I was talking about is Dr. Njoki Ndung'u, who has had affirmative action. Justice Njoki Ndung'u, judge of the Supreme Court, who has been a strong gender activist. She is the architect of amendments of the Employment Act 2007, providing for paid maternity and paternity leave, and political, Act 2007 on Party Act of Affirmative Action, which ensures that women are in political participation. So those are the two ladies that I really admire and are my trailblazers. Because you can imagine, as we've said, when women also go for their maternity, nobody cares. And same as now, they want also the men also are also given that, right to be able to. So, and that is enacted in our constitution. So I think that was very commendable of the two ladies.
Dr. Otieno, I know our conversation has covered a myriad of different points. I want to take you back to kind of your roots and your day-to-day work. And you've spoken about the fact that you focus on resource-poor farmers. Can you tell us about an impactful story of how the work that you've done has been meaningful in a community, and particularly with women farmers?
So we've worked closely with the women farmers, especially some of the varieties that I have managed to breed for are disease resistant. Blight is one of the most important, economically important disease in potato production, because it can cause up to 80 to 100% yield loss. And it also requires a lot of pest control in terms of spraying with fungicides. And most of potato farming is done by women because it's a backbreaking exercise. Most of the small-scale farmers, they use a hoe to dig, plow during weeding. They do that during planting. They plant and also crop management. So for the crop manager, if you have disease-resistant variety, it means the farmers will spend less time and in the field, spraying their crop. And if they have to spray, for sure you have to spray, but it won't be continuously. So these are some of the, if they are resistant, it means it reduces the amount of pesticide, fungicides that are used in the field. That saves on cost, right? And also it frees time for them to be able to supervise. The pest control board does not encourage women, it does not allow women to spray the crop. Spraying is for men, right? But even as a woman.
Why?
Yes, because it's not recommended that women spray crops. It's a domain for men because women, we have breasts, if you those when you can easily be predisposed. It's also a health hazard issue. So the pest control board doesn't allow. So these women, maybe they just do the supervisory work. So this reduces amount of time that they spend in the field, which can be put in other, resource generating activities rather than spending that time in the field. We also have some varieties that have short cooking time. So when it has short cooking time, most of our resource-poor farmers cook with firewood. So that means they save on energy, all right? And energy is a big component in a big resource in the households. They spend less time cooking. It means they save the energy. And because it's a short cooking time, most of them like it for the family because then it will save them energy and time for cooking. And when we go to the farmers and we give different varieties, when they cook them, they tell you, because there are some of our panels that helps us in getting to know which variety can be channeled out in the last breeding, when you are in our last breeding steps. because apart from having a disease tolerant variety, high yielding, what is the essence? You want it to be cooked and eaten, right? If it is has a short cooking time, it's a plus, right? If it is a disease tolerant, it's a plus. If it is a short, maturing, early maturing, it's also a plus, because then it means if it's early maturing, means you'll be able to plant it in the year more than 3 times, right? So that is resources that are spread over the year that the farmer is assured of. Okay, if you get a variety that cooks quickly, most of the consumers would want it, because then they will save energy while cooking this variety. You have some other variety that will take longer cooking, so it means it's the energy is eaten up, right? So it's expensive, right? Thank
These are
you.
amazing elements of it is really going to make me rethink potatoes, of how you have designed for disease resistance, how you have designed for nutrition, how you have designed for faster cooking times. When you're doing these developments, on average, how long does it take for you to go through this breeding process to design the features that you want out of your potato?
So, conventional breeding of potatoes takes 12 years. We have been, yes. So, in most of the cases, some of the potatoes that we had in Kenya were developed by the International Potato Center, okay? And some of the varieties were brought as advanced clones to the country that were just taken to multi-locational trials. So, like almost a completely finished product that we want to check in the different locations how they perform as advanced clones. So these we did, some of the potatoes we did multi-locational trials. Some of the potatoes also have come from the European, specifically Netherlands and Germany, came also as advanced clones, or probably released varieties in those countries, but now when they come in the country, there are already varieties that they take through the multi-locational trials and then national performance trials, and see how the farmers, how they're adopting the farmers' fields and how the farmers want them, like them. So they could be very high yielding, but maybe these varieties are highly intolerant to blight. So require several seasons or several cycles of spraying. So when you take it and try to test it with the farmers, they will them some who are big commercial farmers would pick it because they have the resources, but you can imagine the small scale farmers, they will not be able to spray it those many times, right? Because spraying means is money, right? In terms of the pesticide, I mean the fungicide, and also in terms of labor of the person who is applying those fungicides. And others, when farmers take them, they will also try to test them. If they feel like it's watery, it's not as mealy as I want, they will reject it, say, no thanks, I don't like that. Or some will be like, no, it cooks long, I don't like it. So some of those varieties were brought in and they just took 2 years and got released because they were advanced clones. But from our breeding program, it takes up to 12 years as you try to test it. Yes.
Amazing process. Thank you very much for sharing the inner operations of the work that you do. We're coming towards the end of the show now, and a question I ask all my guests is about some of the factors that they feel have contributed to their success. So please, can you share a few success drivers with us?
Some of my success drivers is the one is you have to be very determined in whatever one wants to do. Okay. So I would say the person who helped shape me to who I am was my mother, who kept on telling me, "You can be what you want to be." She's late. May her soul rest in peace. When we were growing up, so I grew up in in a small town in Western Kenya. My mother used to work as a clerical officer in the veterinary department, Minister of Agriculture, but a very junior person. And her boss was a woman. And she kept on telling me, oh, she was a veterinary doctor, her boss. And she kept on telling me, you know, when you go to school, work very hard, you know, doctor, she was Grace. Dr. Grace is very successful. Her children are going to the best school. I'm sorry, I wasn't able to take you to the best school, but you can take your children to the best school. These days, I remember that because she pushed us to, we are four of us in our family, two sisters and two brothers. And she pushed us to work hard and said, "You can be better than me and live better lives than." And I remember very vividly that just to make us know that our life is different from others, we had some leafy suburbs in the area. It's Kisumu. It's called Kisumu. That she would dress us up and let us walk in that neighborhood. And we would peep through the fence. We see very nice homes. And she says, if you work hard, you'll own a house better than that. You know, when you go home, it sticks in your head and say, oh, so our life is different from theirs, you know? And that pushed us, I think, in our family to work very hard. And she said, the only thing that can make you be better than me is when you go to school and work hard. And true to whatever she used to prophesy to us, even though she didn't live to see us, you know, I think she's smiling wherever she is.
Well, I think that you and your siblings are her legacy.
Yeah. But sometimes I feel like I wish you were here to share with you some of the, you know, those memorable moments when she would push me to work hard and tell me that when you work hard, then your credentials will, I think I'd mentioned that your credentials will talk on your behalf when you're not there. And I've believed that hard work really is the best thing that someone can put into something. And I believe in a power that God, you know, he also helps shape our future. But with the determination, with the perseverance, and with hard work, nothing is impossible. That if you put your heart to do something and you are very passionate about it, almost like obsessed, you know, that we have to make it. Somehow it happens. So I believe that with hard work, with discipline and with determination and with prayers, sometimes I call it luck. Yeah. Because we say that we when we risk luck, we should respect luck as much as you respect risk. Because both are the ideas that outcome can be influenced by events outside your control. If risk is what happens when you make good decisions but end up with a bad outcome, okay? Luck is what happens when you make bad or mediocre decisions and end up with great outcome. They both happen because the world is too complex to allow 100% of our actions to dictate 100% of our outcomes. But you see, for risk, it is easy to pay attention because it gives you an intellectual of what you think may be happen. But luck is opposite. Yeah. So I think also luck plays a role. I don't know what to think about it, you know. As much as you work hard, also sometimes some things just happen, you know, but we overlook luck, right? Yeah, the ability to recognize that your wins might be downplayed and ignored in a way risk isn't, right?
I think sometimes it's also hard when you are a scientist because there is so much logic that comes into play, and
Yes.
it almost wants you to find this rationale behind it, which is why the risk side is maybe more quantifiable than the luck piece, but luck certainly plays a part.
Yeah, it does.
And lastly, Dr. Otiano, can you share a few words of inspiration or wisdom for women who are listening to us?
What I would say is that no matter where you are, or what you want to achieve, just I would say you should be consistent. If you decide that you want to do something, consistency is very important. And there is reward in discipline, in hard work, and perseverance. And you should be able to focus in whatever course you set your mind to follow through. And with this, if you work hard towards a goal that you have set yourself to achieve, it is doable. Many people have done it, and many people will continue doing. So it is just you to tweak your mind or to train your mind to be able to, you know, focus on this course that you want to do. And you will be able to achieve it once you're passionate about it. So I think to the young girls out there, be encouraged that whatever course you want to, you know, pursue, so long as there is the passion and the dedication and the commitment, you will be able to achieve it. So I encourage us to go for whatever thing that we have put our mind to. Yeah, and pursue it, and you'll get it.
Thank you very much for that positive message, and thank you for joining us on the show today and sharing the insights into your journey and the wonderful impact that you're having on the economy and a country and society at large.
Well, thank you very much.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity, and we have been talking to Dr. Susan Ottiano, who is a geneticist and plant breeder heading up the potato breeding program at the Kenya Agriculture and Livestock Research Organization.